Good evening, councillors. Good evening, staff. Being 5:30 on Monday, the 23rd of May 2016, declare open council meeting number 9. I would remind all persons in attendance that it is council policy to record council meetings. The audio recording of this meeting will be made available to the public on council's website for a period of 12 months. In accordance with council policy, I'll ask the general manager to confirm that the audio recording has commenced. It has, thank you. I would like to acknowledge the original custodians of this land and pay my respect to them, their customs and to their elders past, present and future. In attendance tonight we have myself, Councillor Wass, Deputy Mayor Reet, Councillors Atkinson, Berry, Chatterton, Grace, Percy and Winter. From staff we have our General Manager, Mr Gary Arnold, our Deputy General Manager, Mr Tony Ferrier, our Chief Financial Officer, Mr John Breen, our Executive Manager Organisational Development, Ms Penny Hughes, our Executive Manager Information Services, Mr Fred Malt, our Executive Manager Engineering Services, Mr David Reeve, our Manager Environmental Services, Mr John Dool, our Manager Community and Recreational Services, Mr Daniel Smee, our Contracts and Procurement Officer, Mr Hugh Rowley, our Media and Communications Officer, Ms Sarah Wilcox, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Amanda Morton. I don't think I've missed anyone. On page 2 is apologies. We have 2 apologies tonight, Councillor Bastone and Councillor Fox, both of which leave of absence has been granted. Confirmation of minutes of Council Meeting number 8, held on Monday the 9th of May 2016. I have a mover in Councillor Chadden and seconder in Councillor Grace that the minutes of Council Meeting number 8, held on the 9th of May 2016, be confirmed. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? That is carried unanimously. The workshops held since our last meeting, there was one on the 16th of May on the Kingston Beach and Adventure Bay projects. Declarations of interest. I ask whether councillors have any declarations of interest that they wish to declare. There are none. We'll move on to page 3 and 4.
Can I just ask why the workshop from last week, from the budget workshops, not included in the workshops?
Which was on
Thursday.
The agenda had been closed.
Okay, so it's been held since, but yeah.
Yes. Questions on notice from the public. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice from the public. Questions without notice from the public. Are there any questions without notice? There are none. Questions on notice from councillors. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice from councillors. Questions without notice from councillors? There are none. Motions on which notice has been given. Local government reform. The following notice of motion has been submitted by Councillor. When do you formally move that, Councillor? Thank you. Do I have a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Grace. Councillor Winter.
I was thinking about local government reform and how far we've got to, and it's almost a year to the day since we had a little bit of trouble getting there, but we finally got to a good position for what we wanted for Kingborough. It was the 25th of May last year. And I was thinking about how this moves forward, and while we've got a motion on the books saying that we want to look at all the options, we want to weigh up our existing circumstances against other options, we can't do that if one of our neighbouring councils isn't taking part. So sort of looking forward and thinking about a situation where we have a report from the Greater Hobart Review, if that's what you want to call it. But if we don't have anything to compare it to, if we don't have the options available to us, the work and research being done in terms of what resource sharing or boundary adjustment or amalgamation with Huon Valley would look like, then to me it would be very difficult to make a decision in the best interest of our ratepayers. So I don't want to talk about Huon Valley too much, apart from to say that everyone knows there's a review going on, and my view is that in this particular circumstance, this process that the state government's going to be as set up could be held up and disadvantaged by one particular council here holding us up. So I thought this was a constructive way we could kind of nudge both the local government minister and also Huon Valley Council to say that we're still keen on this. Our general manager has put some background there that shows that we've outlined what our position is very clearly, but we haven't heard back. So I hope this is supported.
Thank you, Councillor Winner. Any further debate? Councillor Chadden?
I concur with the comments of Councillor Winner, but I just thought the timing was a little bit out at this point in time, bearing in mind the situation down the valley and bearing in mind that they're not quite sure where things are going with reports and reports and reports, and I know one of the councillors sitting behind me in the gallery now, so I just thought it was a little bit poorly timed. I thought we could have waited until after the minister had handed down his decision and the council down there, we knew where we were going, whether we had a council down there to deal with or whether we had perhaps administration to deal with. And I just think it's just a little bit early. I would have liked to have seen the problems closed off down the valley before we pushed further, just as a hand of good friendship with the valley.
Thank you, Councillor Chadden. Councillor Grace?
I sort of concur with Councillor Chadden in the sense the Huon Valley's got their own internal problems down there, and obviously they're going to be sorted out very quickly, and one would hope they'll be sorted out in a proper manner. That's not our concern, but this council, but I think, again, I second this because I thought it'd be great to debate it, but again, it's something that we can't do very much about at all until after the inquiry. We find out what happens, and then maybe there might not be a Huon Valley Council by then. I don't know. We don't know. Hopefully there is for the community down there.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm glad that Councillor Winter's raised this. We've talked a lot about the possibility of Kingborough and Huon Valley sharing resources or amalgamating or something, and it was the long-standing position of the council that we talk with Huon Valley. I sort of agree with where Councillor Winter's coming from in that it's difficult if we can't even start the conversation, and all this motion is asking for is, as it says, to remind the minister that that's our position and that's where we're coming from. It's not saying take particular action tomorrow or anything like that. It's just saying this council believes that discussion with Huon Valley is important, and at the moment the reaction's been to close the door on that. It would be a shame if we had this study involving Hobart and Glenorchy and so on and didn't have that work done with Huon Valley. It may come back and say the status quo is absolutely fine, but We keep saying we make decisions on qualified advice. We can't get advice if we don't do the study, and so I think it's important to do what we can to make this work happen so that we can have that discussion. It's not preempting any result, and it's not saying something should happen soon. It's just, as I said, reminding the minister that's our position.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Councillor Winner, would you like to close debate, please?
I've got a lot of...
Councillor Lurie.
Thanks. Look, just to concur with the comments that have been made, it is a difficult situation because at the time when we passed this motion, we didn't envisage that the inquiry would be launched into the Huon Valley Council, and I'm sure neither did they. And so in a way their hands are tied, but I don't think it can hurt to remind the Minister that we are keen and we wanted to talk to all parties, and that should be borne in mind, and hopefully that will prompt a little bit of action on his part, so I support the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Reid. Councillor Berry.
Thank you, Mayor. I support the general thrust of this motion, and I think it's good that it's been brought to our attention. Fundamentally, I'm not sure what the Minister can do apart from suggesting or insisting that there be an amalgamation. I mean, if a council doesn't want to talk to us, I'm not sure the minister asking that the council talk to us will necessarily make a lot of difference to their point of view about it. But I do think it is a step in the right direction, and I will support it.
Thank you, Councillor Berry. Councillor Winter. Thank you. I'll put the recommendation, moved by Councillor Winter, seconded by Councillor Grace, that Council write to the Minister for Local Government regarding the State Government's local government reform process. .1, reminding the Minister of Kingborough Council's resolution 25 May 2015 to invite Huon Valley Council to take part in a joint feasibility study. And .2, urging the Minister to take whatever steps are necessary to encourage Huon Valley Council to resume discussions aimed at a joint feasibility study with Kingborough Council. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? That is carried unanimously. And at this point, I'd like to acknowledge now that we've done with that item, Councillor Wilson from Huon Valley Council in the audience. Welcome, Councillor Wilson. On page 5, petition still being actioned. A report on the petition submitted to Council meeting held on the 9th of May 2016 headed Lower Oxley's and Groombridge's Road, Kettering, has been referred to the Executive Manager Engineering Services and will be provided to the Council meeting to be held on the 14th of June 2016. Petitions received in the last quarter. On the day of compiling the agenda, no petitions had been received. Remind councillors that we are now moving and acting as a planning authority. So the planning authority meeting will commence at 5:41. And the first item is delegation authority, and there is a recommendation on page 8. Thank you, Councillor Reid. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Berry. Any questions, comments, councillors? I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Reid and seconded by Councillor Berry that the report be noted. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? Carried unanimously. The second item is on page 9, a development application 2016129, an extension of an existing dwelling requiring relaxation of front boundary setback at 105 Wells Parade, Blackmans Bay. A recommendation is on page 21. And I have a mover in Councillor Chatterton and seconded by Councillor Reid. Councillor Chatterton.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, I know the site quite well. I pass it quite frequently. It's a very low-styled house there on that side of Wells Parade. The second story is still within the height restrictions allowed. It seems to me that the designs that are happening to put the additional story on and the addition on the side are quite in keeping with the other houses in the area. It's just that it's a corner block, and naturally it's got, and in a very funny shape block, I suppose, it's got very limited setbacks from that perspective, but the main side of the house faces Wells Parade. Although it's still called Wells Parade, it's a cul-de-sac of Wells Parade running down the other side. I see no problem in what's before us, and I certainly endorse the conditions set attached to the permit.
Thank you, Councillor Chadden. On that case, I will put the recommendation moved by Councillor Chadden, seconded by Councillor Reid, that in accordance with Council Policy 1.1, Delegated Authority Policy, the Planning Authority resolves that the report of the Manager Development Services be received and the development application for extension to an existing dwelling requiring relaxation of front boundary setback at 105 Wells Parade, Blackmans Bay for Mrs. A.D. Cole be approved subject to the following conditions. There are 7 conditions and 2 advice notes. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? That is carried unanimously. Next item is on page 29, so the open session now will resume at 5:44. Renaming of Citron Road. So I have a mover in Councillor Grace. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Percy. Councillor Grace.
Yes, Mayor. It makes sense. You've got two names there in a short distance to make it into one name. Obviously makes sense to everybody.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Councillor Chadden?
Just a question. Have we in the past assisted the people living in a street that has to be renamed? Because there's so many organisations, etc., that need to be notified of a change when one changes a house number, for example. And in this case, will council support the residents in assisting them with the name change that's been put on them, e.g. do we advise authorities such as Aurora, such as Australia Post, those common ones, that the streets have changed and therefore they can pick it up from that perspective, or do we leave it all to the ratepayer to have to go through the myriad of things that they need to do?
Thank you, Councillor. Question. Good question. I understand that council advises all, but in this day and age with NBN, I'm not too sure whether we get to those, but I'm sure Mr. Ferrier can answer that for us. Mr. Ferrier.
Through the Chair, we do notify as many government bodies and organisations as we possibly can. It's important to notify them, particularly in relation to emergency services. Yes, we do. I can't be specific about that as to where we draw the line and which ones we do and we don't, but we do notify as many as we possibly can. But it's still incumbent upon the landowners themselves to ensure that all of their own private and I guess sort of where they see it's necessary to advise government bodies as well, just in case there's some sort of uncertainty over that, it's still incumbent on them to notify them of any change of address. But we do notify as many government bodies as we can.
Mr. Mayor, I just think when we notify the ratepayers and residents in that particular street, I think it's important that we sort of say we're handing on information to bodies that we can, but it's up to them, and at least it shows we're just not throwing them out in the cold, we're prepared to try and assist.
Thank you, Councillor Chatterton. Councillor Reid?
I was going to ask something similar to Councillor Chatterton, but to take it a little bit further, I guess I'm interested in whether we did do any consultation with the ratepayers prior to this motion coming to Council today, because I note that 8 of the residents objected to the street being joined up to Tingera Road in the first place, and I would just hope that this wasn't going to come as a complete shock to them, and I can't see any mention in the report of any consultation with them. So can Mr. Ferrier shed any light on that?
Mr. Ferrier, you're able to answer.
Through the Chair, the residents are aware of the subdivision. We haven't notified the residents immediately before this particular report coming to Council that the name change is being proposed, so I guess they would be aware of that proposal with the subdivision that's gone forward. But we haven't notified them because their views at this particular point in time are not something that we can necessarily take into account of. We'll certainly let them know once the decision is made, but to notify them beforehand is not something that would, I suppose, contribute to this particular process.
I think out of courtesy it would have been respectful to those residents, given we're only talking about, I think, 12 houses in that street, or 14 I think, to let them know that this was on the agenda for this evening, just so that it doesn't come as a shock, because I mean I was here when we put the subdivision DA through, and I don't recall any discussion at that time of renaming of Citrine Road to Tingera Road. So I think we probably have unfortunately missed the boat on that one. But I'm just wondering, further on from Councillor Chatterton's point about, you know, what assistance do we give them, I wonder if it would be useful when we are writing to them and communicating the decision to also provide them with a pro forma letter which makes it, that they can use then to photocopy to send to the authorities to say, you know, this, we haven't moved house, we've actually, you know, our road and our number has been redone, just in case there are any difficulties, because this is an unusual situation that we're facing.
Thank you, Councillor Ray.
Through the Chair, yes, happy to do that, and in fact we'll notify the residents specifically of the government agencies that we've contacted so that they're aware of which ones we've actually told, so that if they see that there's any ones that they still need to contact, then they'll know which ones we've dealt with.
Thank you. Councillor Berry?
Just briefly, I mean, there really doesn't seem to be any alternative to us doing this, but and I support it, but in support of what Councillor Chatterton and Councillor Reid have been saying, having just very recently moved my address, believe me, it's not a small task to make sure that your bills get sent to the right place, you change the address, you wonder why they're still going. They said, oh, no, you just gave us your residential address. You should have given us your postal address. Believe me, it is a bit of a nightmare, and I think, you know, I think what's been said is appropriate, and any help we give the residents, I'm sure they would appreciate it. I would have done.
Thank you, Councillor. Very close debate, Councillor Grace.
Just that the reason I moved was on the report. It says on page 29, 2.3, how many representatives were received by this council. I won't read it all out, but on page 30, the basis of the objections was largely in relation to traffic volumes and flow and the impact of safety. Well, that can't impact much more. We pass, it won't impact any more on changing the name because the subdivision's been done anyway. So I can't see where that paragraph has any relevance to this at all. So I'm happy with the report. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation. Moved by Councillor Grace, seconded by Councillor Percy, that A, Council discontinue the name Citron Road, and that this section of road be an extension of the existing Tingira Road, and that affected residents, government bodies and service providers be advised in writing of the change to the street name and numbers, and B, the Nomenclature Board be formally notified of this decision in order to enable information databases to be updated. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? Is carried unanimously. The next item is on page 34, the Derwent Estuary Program, and there is a recommendation on page 37. Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Thank you, Councillor Percy. Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you, Mayor. Derwent Estuary Program, from the little I've had to do with it, is a most impressive organisation and does very good work. This report summarises well why they intend to move to being a not-for-profit. There are advantages to the organisation in particularly an application for grants. I'm convinced from reading this that the management of the Derwent Estuary Program have considered the implications of the change, and I think that it's, you know, something that we should support. Nothing to add.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Councillor Percy.
Yeah, just a technical one. Can somebody please explain what a limited by guarantee actually involves as far as what is the guarantee? Is it an amount or something we've got to do or something we're going to be held to do? Thank you.
Mr. Arnold, I guess, would...
I'm happy to take that one on notice through you, Mr. Mayor, primarily because my explanation mightn't pick up all the intricacies of it, so it's probably best that Council have that, from the legislation itself.
About all the intricacies, can you just give us a brief outline of what it is? Because it's one I don't see very often, that's all.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, my understanding is that by becoming a not-for-profit limited by guarantee, the board and the board are basically saying that they come under the ASIC requirements, and that's the long and short of it. And as a result of that, they're required to meet a far stricter financial reporting regime than they currently do.
Councillor Chadden.
I might be able to help in that because I'm involved in one of these situations. As I understand it, the General Manager alluded to is right. Most non-for-profits are just ink, and a lot of them now are going to limited by guarantee. You'll find there's a lot of the larger inks, things like, for example, the type of thing I'm referring to would be, say, the Royal Flying Doctor Service type organisations. They are going to become companies limited by guarantee, and that's the way. And I'm actually working on another organisation with a guy in Melbourne who specialises in transferring and merging inks, and this is the way he recommends that everybody goes with the with the existing inks if they have to upgrade, and so apparently it's the in way to go. But the general manager is correct. One, you're dealing with ASIC, where the other side you're not dealing with ASIC. That's the difference in the two.
Thank you, Councillor Chadden. Councillor Berry.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Look, I support this, and I'm not sure why I feel a little bit uneasy about it. I think it's probably because it's been such an excellent program, an alliance between business councils, and it, that has worked extremely well. It's been extremely well run, and certainly they have supported and facilitated one substantial grant, at least, that we've had that had the support of the Donor Gesture Bureau. And maybe nothing's going to change and it's just going to go on to be bigger and better, but maybe I shouldn't feel uneasy, but it's a model of just how effective and how well run an organisation of this nature can be. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Berry. Councillor Reid.
Thank you. The comments by Councillor Chatterton in relation to, you know, what is a company limited by guarantee are correct, and this is the way that all of the bigger incorporated associations are going now rather than incorporation. And it does have a raft of reporting obligations. It does mean that it wouldn't need to report any longer to the State Department of Consumer Affairs, because that's under the Associations and Corporations Act, but it does mean that they have other reporting obligations, and they would also now have to, under this model, would probably also need to, or they would need to, register with the Australian Commission for Not-for-Profits and Charities and do annual reporting to there. So certainly the reporting requirements would be very robust. Look, I support this. This is I've been involved with the Derwent River Estuary Program for many years through my previous roles, and they do fantastic work. I'm delighted to see that this will enable them to attract sufficient grants. It will certainly give them a more, I think, easier operating structure in that regard. I guess I was surprised to see this, given that we had a workshop, and I was trying to see in my notes and I couldn't find it when it was that we had it, but it was certainly this year, not that long ago, that we had a workshop, and we had the manager of the program here, and I'm just surprised that this wasn't mentioned at that time. So I kind of read this and thought, oh, we weren't told that when we had the workshop, but obviously this has occurred since then. I wish the program well in this transitional period.
Thank you, Councillor Reid. Councillor Atkinson, if you'd like to close debate. Thank you. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Atkinson, seconded by Councillor Percy, that Council support the registration of the Derwent Estuary Program as a not-for-profit company limited by guarantee. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Page 38 is the Tazwater funding proposal and a recommendation on page 40. Thank you, Councillor Grace. Do I have a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Winner. Councillor Grace.
I agree with this entirely, as I've said right from the beginning. Once we had the water and sewage taken from us, those assets have been paid for by the taxpayers. I don't even know why we're getting the dividends anyway. I mean, all the money should be put back into water and sewage. So that's my view, and it's always been my view on that, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Councillor Winner.
Yeah, look, I've been a little bit critical of some of Tazwater's work recently. However, what I'm not critical of is, well, what I understand is that they have a massive, massive task in front of them. And the reform that went through was, whilst controversial and unpopular at the time, was so important in making sure that Tasmania gets its water and sewage infrastructure up to scratch. I cringe a little bit when I see our bodies that we're members of, like Southern Council's authority spruiking the Bridgewater Bridge because, for federal funding, because I really think that if there's any piece of infrastructure in Tasmania that needs assistance, it's our water and sewage infrastructure, and that's really where if you want to do something that was actually good for Tasmania, any federal politician that listens to this tape, you do something about our water and sewage infrastructure. But of course, there's not been too many boats in that area, so I doubt we'll see anything. I had a couple of questions. The first one was I can ask a question later if I want, can't I? Okay. So I'll come back if I need to. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Percy.
Thank you. Yeah, I certainly agree with Councillor Winters about Taswater's massive task ahead of them, and I certainly agree with this recommendation. I just want a bit of clarification. I know the General Manager's already given it to Councillor Atkinson tonight, but I think just for the record, we probably should just have a clarification on the figures that we're given here. Said there's an $82 million figure there. We've got 5.91% of it, which means basically 4.8 million of it belongs to us, but there for further down it just says that it's approximately $40,000 per annum for a 10-year life of the moratorium. So I'm just trying to work out where 400,000 is 4.8 million, and apparently he knows the answer.
Mr. Arnott will be more than happy to deliver that information to you. Mr. Arnott.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. In essence, the reference in the report, the 40,000 per annum, refers to the lost revenue or loss of potential revenue, if you like, over the decade of this proposal. It's predicated upon our long-term financial plan projections, which in early years are on the money in terms of the current situation, and in the latter years, the 7 years, we've adopted a very conservative approach to escalation at around 2%. Taswater, by contrast, have in their letter talked about compounding of tariffs and distributions at an average of 4.5% per annum over the 10 years. And therein lies the difference. If you were to use Taswater's figures, the 40,000 per annum would be significantly higher. Where it becomes difficult to accurately predict this, quite frankly, is that Taswater are subject to the economic regulator. And on a 3-year triennial basis, have to put a case to the economic regulator to, it's called their prices and servicing plan for that period of time. The reason that we're in the current moratorium is that the last triennial plan was not accepted in toto by the economic regulator, despite Taswater's protestations, and resulted in a moratorium for the term of this current PSP. And on that basis, our long-term financial plan projections are, like a number of councils across the state, conservative and not in accord with Taswater's own projections. So that's the best way I can answer it, Councillor Percy.
Thank you, Mr. Arnold. Councillor Reid?
Following on from that question then, do I take it that the long-term financial plan will need to be amended to reflect this development?
Mr. Arnold?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Possibly, Councillor Reid, and the reason I say possibly is that, again, it's dependent on the triennial terms and the economic regulators' decisions for each of those 3-year periods. At this point in time, our long-term financial plan takes into account the current moratorium for the 3-year period. It takes a conservative approach moving forward for the latter 7 years of our 10-year financial plan, as opposed to Taswater's more optimistic projections. So it's something that would be a watching brief down the track.
Okay, so because we'll be signing off on the long-term financial plan, or being asked to sign off on the long-term financial plan at next week's meeting, there will be no change. In light of this, there will be no change to it. but it does mean that we might need to change it a few years down the track, depending on what happens after that 3 year.
Mr. Arnold?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, yes, possibly. And as this agenda report outlines, I suspect that councils across the state will have similar discussions, obviously, as they reach their consideration of it, because depending on how individual councils have projected their long-term financial plans, the impact for some will be far greater than it is in our case.
Yeah. Look, I fully support this, because I think, you know, the fact they've got a $1.8 billion problem is significant, and they inherited some infrastructure that was, you know, well underdeveloped and not maintained appropriately. So I think we all have to, as councils, and I hope the other owner councils do, take the decision also to accept this. I think Councillor Winter's right. There's nothing sexy about water and sewerage, and it'd be great to have the federal government during the election campaign come in and say, you know, we'll fund some of this, but the pictures of opening a bridge or a piece of road are far more pleasant than a politician in a hard hat and a vest and gumboots near a sewage system. So that probably kind of says it all, and we're probably... The old north-south debate will probably come into it as well. So I can only hope that there is some success as a result of this, and hopefully the commitment that the Canberra Council is now making, and hopefully the other owner councils, will show the state and federal governments that we're prepared to take some pain in this, and that they should be also.
Thank you, Councillor Reid. Some questions, Councillor Winter?
Yeah, I was surprised that our opinion mattered, if you know what I mean. I thought this is one of those ones where is this one of those ones where they're asking us politely what we think, and then it doesn't actually really matter? Because they've obviously got an independent board that we don't have a representative on. So does it actually matter what we do here?
Yeah, I'll ask Mr. Arnold to respond.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Winter, the short answer is yes, it does actually matter.
That's good.
The essence of Taswater's proposal to both the federal and state governments, assuming that the majority of the 29 councils support this proposal, is effectively that Taswater are saying over the next decade they have a $1.8 billion capital spend to bring the state's infrastructure, water and sewerage, up to the standard it should be. Their long-term financial plan can accommodate a $1.2 billion spend, hence a $600 million shortfall. In essence, they're asking the federal government to put in $300 million, the state government to put in $100 million, Taswater will put in $100 million, which they say will be through, in the main, savings gained through efficiencies of $10 million per annum on average for that period. And the final component of the package are the 29 owner councils, and the remaining $100 million by Taswater's projections, 82 of the $100 million can come from the extension of the moratorium on Taswater dividends. And it's, in essence, it's foregone revenue for the 29 councils, as I said earlier, that would mean we were sharing some of the pain.
Thanks.
And at last Taswater general meeting, we were asked whether or not we would consider this, and collectively we indicated that because we hadn't indicated this proposal to our councillors, obviously the time constraints, that we wanted to bring that back so that everyone could have a say in it. I agree with what Councillor Reid and what the General Manager said, that if we're going to get those funds from the state and federal government, we really have to show the way and show some leadership. And if we were not to be prepared to assist, then I think then that both the state and the federal would say, well, you know, you can't handle it, so why do you want us to handle it? And I think if we take the leadership role and put some money into it and are prepared, there are some urgent requirements to be done. And I think they'll come home to us a lot quicker. And I think then by doing this, the pressure then is back on the state and the federal government, and I think both of those have been and certainly are considering it, and we'll certainly watch with interest what the councils around Tasmania will do. Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you. I read through the report and the letter from Taswater, and I agree they've got a very difficult situation with a lot of money they have to find, and they're not in a financial position to fund it through debt. I'm a little bit concerned about the timescales involved here. Like a 10-year commitment for funding can be a commitment for very little funding over the next 7 years, and it all be in the last couple of years, which is a long way off and a lot of governments off, and may never occur. And I'm also interested in what happens if they presumably if they don't secure that $400 million funding, there'll be another request for changes. You know, there's no guarantee that's going to happen, and they're going to be a situation where they don't have money. Am I correct saying that if they don't secure that funding, then all bets are off? Like we haven't agreed to a moratorium. I can see nothing in the motion about when they have to secure that funding. It's just saying that they have to secure a commitment, but is there a time that they have to secure it by?
Mr. Arnold.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Atkinson, I think the clear implication or inference from both the chairman of Taswater, Miles Hampton, and the CEO, Mike Brewster, at the last general meeting that the Mayor and I attended just over a week ago, was that the window of opportunity was prior to the forthcoming federal election, and that that was the target, hence the special meeting that's been scheduled to allow all councils to consider a report of this nature and have their representatives attend that meeting in sufficient time to still have the best part of a month prior to the forthcoming federal election.
Well, as the motion stands, I think it's very open-ended. I'd feel much more comfortable if it had a clause in there to say secure commitment from the state and federal government to make grants totaling no less than $400 million over a 10-year period by the 2nd of July 2016, because at the moment they could say, yep, we're still working on that. And there's nothing in there to say when they have to do it by.
Mr. Arnold, would you like to respond?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I think the only response I can make to that, Councillor Atkinson, is that I'm sure if the Chair or CEO of Taswater were here, their response would be along the lines of it may be that the commitment is indicated in the lead-up to the federal election and not forthcoming until the result is known, and hence difficult to put a date on.
Okay, I'll think about how I want to vote, but I have reservations about a commitment that's not solid, that's over a 10-year period, that we've seen election promises in the past that drift on and on and on, and the money never arrives, or it was sort of a commitment or not a core promise. So I have reservations about it, but thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Councillor Chatterton.
I'd suggest that perhaps we could add the words subject to successful subject to Taswater being successful in their grant applications and leave the date off. That just leaves some time. That could get around it.
That's really what the motion says now.
Yeah, and that's really what it's saying. So, I mean, I think if we pass this and in 2 months' time, we'll know whether the grants are likely to happen. And if it doesn't happen, we can soon give a rescind motion. So we're covered from that perspective.
I would suggest on that if come the August-September meeting and we've heard nothing, I'm sure both the General Manager and I will report that back, and we can certainly look at it where we go, if that makes it more comfortable. Councillor Grace, would you like to close the vote?
Look, as I said, I moved to support it. But what I am concerned about, just thinking, listening to the debates around the table, is the fact that, for instance, there's been pipes laying down in Margate steel pipes, which are very expensive to make for over a year now, and I just feel that's a waste of finances, is it, to just to buy them and sit them in the paddock for 2 or 3 years before, or 2 years before they're going to use them. And I wouldn't like to see that happen. And I think, Mr. Mayor, when you're at the next water meeting, I'm representing Kingborough, not only I have mentioned it, but a lot of other people have said, well, what the hell are they spending all the money to just sit the pipes in the paddock for?
All right, I'll put the recommendation, councillors. Moved by Councillor Grace, seconded by Councillor Winner. The council resolved to agree to a moratorium on increases in distribution for a further 7 years in the event that Taswater secures commitment from state and federal governments to make grants totalling no less than $400 million over a 10-year period. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Councillor Grace, could you let me know details on that later, please, where they are, etc.? On page 43, proposal to amend the Health and Environmental Services bylaw to facilitate cat management on Bruny Island, and there is a recommendation on about page... Sorry? Page 48.
So moved.
Thank you, Councillor Chadden. Thank you, Councillor Reet. Councillor Chadden.
Oh, look, I think it's fantastic. We've been talking about cats on Bruny Island for many, many years, actually, and I know one of our past councillors was here, the ex-councillor Bush. He would be delighted to see things are finally happening with cats on Bruny Island. It was one of his, because he was on the cat management group, and I mean, I think it's a good start, because, you know, we've got cat problems everywhere, and I think if we start with Bruny Island and sort things out there and get these strategies brought in, that could be the start of then other cat management things being brought in for the rest of our municipality as well, because cats are a problem in our municipality, full stop, and probably are in other municipalities. But I think we're starting somewhere. We've got a starting point. We approve this. That's one step, and perhaps all other councillors then can come on, and we can come on in other areas, and the whole cat problem that unfortunately eludes through some people not having proper control of their cats can disappear, and we'll end up with a better situation. I know that when I had a family member living in Queensland, they had to have runs for their cat. The previous owner of their house that they bought had runs, and that was the way of doing things in a particular area in Brisbane, and I think it's the way of the future.
Thank you, Councillor Chadden. Councillor Percy.
Yeah, I certainly agree with the motion. I was actually on Bruny Island today and asked a few questions of what they felt about this over there, and they certainly agree with the approach we've got, although they said that there's probably two people on Bruny Island. If they controlled those people with their cats, I think one person's got 90 cats, I think, at the neck there somewhere, just off the reserve. Another lady somewhere else has got 20 or 30 or something. So if they remove those two problems, then most of the problems on Bruny Island would be fixed as far as cat management. But just reflecting on what we're doing here, I think Tasman Island, I think, spent millions of dollars to get rid of all the cats on there, and that was on an island where uninhabited. Still costing $2 million. There weren't any people on that island to worry about. And here we are at Bruny Island, which is a lot bigger than Tasman Island. It's got people that love cats and want to have cats. They want to own cats. So I think to get to the next stage where we really control all the cats there is going to be a bit harder. But I certainly agree. I can see there where we've possibility of federal funding, which is great, and also got the support of local communities and the Cat Centre, I think, to Peewee and a few others. So I think we're heading down in the right direction. I just think that we don't want to think that this is going to be the end to all our problems over there, and the initial problem could be just fixing those two owners. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Percy. Councillor Reed.
Thank you. I strongly support this as well, and what Councillor Percy says is right. Certainly we know from the surveys that have been undertaken that there is widespread support amongst the Bruny Island community, and certainly from the work and the briefings that we've had from the Cat Management Officer, we know that there are one or two properties in particular that have a significant issue with the numbers of cats, and addressing those will certainly make a difference straight away. I just wanted to clarify the cat holding facility. I wasn't clear from the program budget in the table at 5.1 on page 46. So that is in a projected capital works program. And where is that? Is that going to be built at the Hobart Cat Centre? No. On Bruny Island?
I'll ask Mr. Dill to respond. Mr. Dill, you might have to press the button on the right-hand side first.
Someone needs to switch off so Mr. Dill can speak.
Sorry? Did I press? Oh.
No, turn it off.
Yep.
We're not censoring you.
No, it's proposed to be constructed at Alana.
Okay.
Within the sort of confines of our depot.
So, okay, so we're going to... So the Cat Centre are putting in half the cost of that.
That's correct. We're hoping that it will actually be a semi-portable facility that could be used elsewhere as well. That's the conceptual design of it. But, yeah, they're happy to do that. Within their new business structure, as their letter of support shows, that this is the new direction they want to take, and they're really happy with this kind of program where it'll raise the profile of their organisation as well.
Okay, look, I mean, it's obviously very generous of them, but I guess that's why I made the assumption it would be at the Hobart Cat Centre, so that it could be reused. But if we're looking at a portable structure, because obviously, how many cats will this hold?
Mr. Still? I would suggest not many, five or so, probably. But it's also going
to... Wow, it's like the cost of a hotel room, really,
yeah,
isn't
except
it?
It's actually also going to be a surgical facility and things like this too, where procedures can be undertaken. That's the idea of it.
Okay.
So the subsidised desexing programs, stuff like that, microchipping, all that can be operated out of this centre as well, and possibly the euthanasing of feral cats and things like that. So it's meant to be... That's why it's worked out so expensive.
Sorry, you said killing cats, now I'm upset. okay, so what if it can't... You said that the mobility of it is being looked at. What if we can't do that? Then what are we going to do with the facility once we don't need to...
I think we're factoring in that we can do it. I mean, we're hoping that this whole program is translatable to other municipalities. So, for example, use at Glamorgan Spring Bay or Tasman or Huon Valley or something like that, it could be that this could be located to there for periods of time to help them as well. Because these kind of things it's proposed to do are very difficult to sort of fund at smaller communities.
Yep. Yep, no, that's fine. Thank you. No, I just wanted to commend the work of our Cat Management Officer, Kayleen Allen, because I know how well she's engaged the community as well in the presentations that she's done at our workshops and the way she's progressed this. So if Mr. Dool could pass that on behalf of Council, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Councillor Reid. Councillor Berry?
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I mean, I just support what's been said. It's been an excellent program. The communication with the community so far has been, I think, exemplary. It is a great opportunity to deal with the issue of cats on an island, and I wish it well. It's good to see support from the Cat Centre, and I think it's just an excellent program. It's been very well managed to date. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Berry. Councillor Grace?
As you're aware, I've been tied up with this now for some time. Some of your councillors sitting around the table. When the CAT committee was formed and the first test run was taken on the island, then it folded, now it started. I'm a little bit concerned, Councillor Percy mentioned just a minute ago, and these are the figures that's floating around, and I must admit I spoke about it at a community progress group and wasn't too happy with some of the statements I made. But my main concern is, Mayor, that this thing will end up costing us $1 million, because I don't know how much we spent the last time we did the run and we got rid of, I'm not sure how many cats, but there was quite some number of cats that we disposed of on the island. But we did have the service of the veterinarian at Kettering at the time, who donated her time to make sure these animals were put down professionally. I'm a bit worried the way I hear that this program's going to go, that some of those traps could be sitting there for some time. and then the animal, the cats, if or whatever's in the traps, will starve to death. But my main worry is just to get rid of 20 or 40 cats, you know, I'd like to see a report on what it's cost us to date and what it's like. If we don't get funding from the federal or state government, is it going to stop operation like it did before when we run out of money? We had to stop. It wasn't ongoing. And our lady that we've got here that's doing the work now, she has done a very good job, but she's had to go back and check stuff out that's already been done in the past because there was no proper records of it. You know, and I'm frightened the same thing will happen again. And you never, ever, and I don't care who you are, you will never, ever get rid of cats anyway. There's no way you're going to catch all the cats on Bruny Island.
Right, I can answer some of those. One is the Gregory Andrews, the Threatened Species Commissioner. That's the federal Threatened Species Commissioner, actually spent 2 days here. And I had the opportunity of meeting him, and I was certainly overwhelmed by his desired interest and his real go-getting attitude and the way he wanted to go ahead. Bruny Island is one of 8 islands considered, and there will be 5 islands that will get funding, and I know Mr. Doolan and his staff are very, very hopeful that Bruny might be one of them. And if we can secure that funding, it's good. What price do you pay? I guess it's the price of the fauna also on the island. And there are a number of threatened species that, if you like, are battling to hold their own. And if we do not undertake the work that we're proposing on this, we may or could lose one or more of those species. The number of cats, the domestic cats, are known, but of course it comes down to, if you like, the strays and then the feral cats, and that, I guess, there's a fair indication of numbers, but until that is done we will never know. But we have to start somewhere, and I think there's an opportunity for us to pick up federal funding. What it's cost in the past, I'm sure Mr. Doolan could give us a ballpark figure after this meeting at some appropriate time. And he's saying yes, that he can give us that type of figure. But I guess where I'm coming from, and I think probably some of the other councillors have spoken, that if we don't, what's the going to be the cost on the fauna on the island?
Mr. Mayor, I understand all that and agree, but the federal government, the guy that was over there was talking about $500,000 now.
That's correct.
Whether he comes to tuition with that or not. But my concern as a councillor for the ratepayers of the whole community, because we're only looking at Bruny Island, is if it runs way over and we end up spending $300,000 on this cat program on the island for 20 or 40 cats, we're going to look pretty stupid. So we need, through you, Mayor, we need to be kept informed. If we don't get the Commonwealth grant, I mean, I'm happy to amend the Act. That's not a problem. And that's all we're doing here tonight anyway, is amending the Act.
Yeah, look, I agree with you. The thing is, of course, it will come up budget after budget, year after year, and certainly it's an important aspect. And what you had to say is legitimate. Councillor Winter?
Yeah, Councillor Grace just... asked the same question, because I was looking at the actual motion here. You know, it's actually got nothing to do with the budget, even though that's mentioned in here about some ongoing costs to council. As you say, Mayor, I'm sure we can go back and review that over time if the circumstances change. Something else Councillor Grace touched on was he talked about you're never going to eradicate all cats from the island. I initially thought that was our objective, but Can someone clarify for me what the objective of this is? Are we trying to eradicate all cats from Bruny Island, or are we just trying to manage them?
Okay. Mr. Doolan, are you in the situation to answer that?
I think the ultimate goal would be to eradicate them from Bruny Island, but I think the research UTAS is doing currently will give us a better handle on how realistic that actually is. They've done some really good sort of monitoring of where numbers are. Yeah, that would be the ultimate. But the feral cat control is going to be very difficult. But the domestic cat control, that's something that is achievable. And regardless of the federal government money, that was always where our focus was going to be. and our expenditure year after year has been relatively modest, but we've been doing domestic cat control on both the mainland and Bruny Island. The federal government money just ups the ante on both the controls and the education, but also the feral cat stuff, which is what the minister actually wants. The minister's big goal, the federal minister, is he wants big feral, dead feral cat numbers. That's his goal. And to his credit, Gregory Andrews presented the Bruny Island project in a more balanced light and actually persuaded him that that's not the whole picture. When you're trying to control cats, you have to have a whole program, and that's what we've got on Bruny Island.
Wow, very brutal. Yeah. Did we consider... we've got things like compulsory desexing of cats. Did we consider... I'm sorry if this was... I was in the workshop. It was a little while ago now. Did we consider actually preventing people from bringing new cats to the island as pets as part of this?
I'll ask Mr. Dill to respond.
Through you, Mayor, yes, the biosecurity side of it, that will... That's... We're trying to get our head around the best way, because Bruny isn't a typical island that normally deals with this. It's quite close, so the control of that kind of thing is problematical. But we really hope that the education side of it will, it'll be a self-regulatory thing. People will know that it's not correct to bring cats on, and if there's cats on the ferry, we'll be not. It's things like that. But it is one of the more difficult issues that it will be important to try and control.
So if we can, in that sort of similar vein, if we can look to a maximum number of domestic cats limited to two, why couldn't we look to limit it to zero over time phased in?
Mr. Dill?
We are always mindful of what's acceptable to the community. I mean, we would advocate as staff, I think, that there would be no domestic cats on Bruny Island in 10 years. That last cat on Bruny Island type approach that like Kangaroo Island is advocating, but we have to have community buy into that, and so we're going gently to start off with. The general acceptance is pretty good, but we're mindful that these things take time, but yeah, that's what we would like, certainly.
Throw me a bit, okay. Yeah, I'm happy that obviously this, you're advising what's here, so you know, good luck with it, and hopefully I'm here when we look to change this to a number of zero.
Thank you, Councillor Winder. Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you. Yeah, this is a motion to amend the bylaw, and I think this is an important step. We've talked a long time before my time on council a lot about cats on Bruny Island. As I understand the significance of Bruny Island, I mean, there's the agricultural cost of toxoplasmosis, but there's also the little penguin colonies and the swift parrots, and the swift parrot situation on Bruny is unusual in that sugar gliders don't predate on them. So this is an important place to limit cats, and an island gives you some chance of control. I'm glad that, you know, this has been brought to us in such a systematic way, that we're basing this on good research and evidence and thought-out approach. It's not a random thought that someone had last week. This is part of an ongoing process. Whether there's any chance of eradicating feral cats, and I remember that last bit of information we had said that's a much, much more difficult task, but you know, I'm happy to accept this advice that this is the way to take steps towards controlling cats on Bruny. It's something we said we want to do, and so I think this is there's nothing wrong with this motion.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Councillor Chadden, would you like to close debate?
There's only one thing I'd just refer to, page 53, and it refers to, this is the letter from the ranger in charge of the Huon South West Field Centre, and as he says there, they've been trapping feral cats from the islands for many years, and they've been doing it well, and also that they'll be putting in another community ranger to assist in that. So I think that may help to allay some fears that perhaps Councillor Grace may have had, that they have been doing it and doing it well. And as I say, there'll be another ranger attached, or community ranger attached, to help it as well, but that's adjunct to what the actual motion before us is. And I commend the motion before us.
Thank you, Councillor Chad. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation.
Can I just ask a question? Sorry.
No, yeah. Sorry, you can't. It's closed to vote.
Ah, it is too.
Sorry.
Apologies, yep.
Moved by Councillor Chadden, seconded by Councillor Reid, that the report be noted, and that the statutory process to amend the Health and Environmental Services Bylaw No. 3 of 2011 to allow the control of cats on Bruny Island be commenced. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? That is carried unanimously. The next item is the Kingston Beach Integrated Risk and Adaptation case study on page 54 with a recommendation on page 57. Thank you, Councillor Chadden. Thank you, Councillor Percy. Councillor Chadden.
In respect to our staff, I won't say we've flogged this to death because it would be wrong to say that, but look, we've had workshops after workshops and we've seen some fantastic work done by staff and consultants, and it's now coming to a head, hopefully, and we've got another public consultation period coming up, which we were advised about at our workshop the other day, and I think all this is doing is endorsing what we have seen on numerous occasions, and I just commend, as I say, and compliment the staff and the consultants on the work and effort they've put in over the number of years that I know it's been alluded to, and hopefully the ratepayers and residents of Kingston Beach will appreciate this when they go to the next open demonstration down at Kingston Beach Hall. Is it next month, I think?
Next Thursday. Thank you, Councillor Chadden. Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you. Look, I'd also like to say, I'm glad that we've done this significant work. People talk about the work the Kingborough Council's doing on climate change response. I've been impressed by the presentations and in no way bored by the detailed work that's been done here. I think this is really significant, and some of the findings in this report are very, very significant and will, perhaps cause a bit of upset in the community, but it's much better that we provide information, that we find information. I think it's excellent work that's been done. The motion is to release this information, which, it seems like an excellent idea to me. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Yes, I too would like to compliment staff and certainly Donovan Burton for his work into it. And I think the community that have seen it have been impressed, and the ones that will see it, I think, will also have an eye opener. Councillor Chadden, I'll ask you to close debate. It's all done. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Chadden, seconded by Councillor Percy, that information contained with the report is noted, in that Council approves 1. The launch and public release of the Kingston Beach Integrated Risk and Adaptation Case Study Report, and 2. The public release of inundation modelling and mapping developed for Kingston Beach. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? It is carried unanimously. On page 58 is the Kingston Beach Survey Summary and Recommendations with a recommendation on page 60. Thank you, Councillor Witter. And thank you, Councillor Reid. Councillor Witter.
This is really good and useful information that will add to how we understand what the community thinks when it comes to the design. There's not really a whole lot to this motion apart from to say I think it's good what we did. The consultation is interesting. The feedback is not unexpected, and I hope this leads to some upgrade of the area, and looking forward to seeing how that progresses over the next couple of years.
Thank you, Councillor Winter. Councillor Gross.
I'm just curious on the fact that this is a new survey. I knew that it was going out. We all knew. But what I'm surprised about is the fact that I don't see anything in here relating to the other survey we did some years ago when Councillor Berry was mayor. We closed off Beach Road temporary for some time and we got criticised for that. It didn't go as planned. The police were involved with that. I think it was the police's idea. Well, it was part of Hooning, yes, but there's nothing stopping Hooning coming back. I mean, we're noticing that down at Margate at the moment, every night at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock, some idiot screaming around the street. But I'm just interested, Mr. Mayor, we do these surveys, they go into a basket and never be seen again, and we should be bringing them back out and comparing notes.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. The worst part, of course, if you bring an old one out, is the demographics of that area have changed and probably not so relevant.
Doesn't matter, but it still gives us an indication to go back and look at... that's why we're here. Things change every month.
That's right.
But we should be still going back and looking at this stuff we spend thousands of dollars on for ratepayers' money, and we just don't use it again.
Yep, point taken. Further debate, councillors? I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Winter, seconded by Councillor Reid. The council note the summary of the Kingston Beach survey and incorporate survey findings into the Kingston Beach design documentation. Councillors in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? That is carried unanimously. The next item is on page 68, Cottage Road to Wetlands Track, and there is a recommendation on page 69. Thank you, Councillor Chadden. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Berry. Councillor Chadden.
Yes, Mayor, I think this is a great idea. That area of Cottage Road, which was a little lazy subdivision opposite the industrial area or semi-industrial area there on Browns Road, would then give a link back down into that wetlands area where we've had some walking tracks before. And looking at the photos and diagrams through the report, it seems like a wonderful idea, another link, because we've already got links that go back into Firthside and go under the, which come up through Whitewater Creek and go underneath the highway and across to Firthside. But this would give another link through, so you get a loop to go right around. I mean, I think that'd be fantastic. And we've got those wetlands there, and if we can get more use of the wetlands, why not?
I'm sure Councillor Winter will walk them to see what they're like.
Actually, they are better, for Councillor Winter's benefit, they are better from when it was a sewage plant there at one stage, Councillor Winters.
I was going to say that Council became aware of this when that development went in, as Councillor Chadden alluded to, and certainly the previous Tracks and Trails Committee that Council had also identified this, so there was a lot of representation from the community. I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Chadden, seconded by Councillor Berry, that an allocation of $50,000 be provided from the Kingston Blackmans Bay Public Open Space account to support an application to the Tasmanian Community Fund for the construction of a shared-use trail connecting Cottage Road with Kingston CBD. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? That is carried unanimously. The next item is on page 82, the former Kingston High School site naming competition, and there is a recommendation on page 84. Thank you, Councillor Reid. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Berry. Councillor Reid.
Look, I'm happy to move this. I must say I was... I thought we might get some more adventurous names than this. Having said that, I didn't have any brilliant ideas. But I just thought that... I don't know, I thought we might unearth something really interesting, and I don't know that any of these are a great surprise, except for South Space, which I had to reread to make sure it didn't say South Park. Congratulations to everybody who took the, and thank you to everyone who took the time to submit. I think we had 155 names that were sent in. And I would move this, by the way, with option one, so that we only have one prize, because I don't think, because if we potentially have to purchase another four prizes at $490, I think that's probably $2,000 that we could save ourselves, and just draw, if there are, were multiple nominations, then as it suggests, for option one, that we just draw out of a hat who gets the winning prize, because I don't, in this time of austerity, we can't be too generous. Congratulations to everybody, and we look forward to seeing the finals.
Thank you, Councillor Reid. I'll ask Councillor Berry a seconder whether he's happy with option one. Yes, thank you. Councillor Winter and Councillor Grace. Councillor Grace, you probably had your light on first for a change.
I think one name's missing, and I'm wondering whether I can have it put on.
Grace Lance.
No, 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 White Elephant Park.
Come on.
Because this is going to sink this council, believe me.
We're only talking about a name.
I know we're only talking, and that's why I wanted it added. I'm sure I'll get a seconder.
Councillor Winter.
Look, I had similar thoughts to Councillor Reid.
they're a bit boring with respect to the people who nominated them. I would like to have been able to choose between people to choose between pretty stock standard names and some different new, some unique kind of thoughts. I even thought, you know, we joked about Councillor David Gray's park, but you know, someone, you know, after somebody in the community or something like that. So I'm a bit hesitant to support it because I kind of feel like we can do a little bit better. But I don't, same as Councillor Reid, I'm not a creative kind of guy like that. I can't think of anything either. So that'd all be acceptable to me, except probably South Space as well. So I guess I will support it, but if there was another name that popped up during the process that sounded awesome, I'd love to see it come back and maybe add something else. Maybe within the competition we can have a space to add your own, but... yeah, it's not the fault of anybody. It's just that nothing really jumps out to me as being that exciting. I don't know which one I'd choose.
Thank you, Councillor Winner. Just remind everyone, 192 names came in and this was the selection committee's recommendation to us. So, Councillor Chapman.
I was going to say, come on, look, we've called for names, we've got names. You mightn't like them, but bad luck. They're the top ones and they're going out to vote. That's the way fairness works.
And Bodie McBoat is not one of them, thank goodness. Councillor Reid, you'd like to close debate? Thank you. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Reid, seconded by Councillor Berry, that A, Council release the top five names as follows in no particular order. Kingston Park, South Space. Kingston Hub, Kingston Commons, Kingston Gardens. B, the names to be published for voting by the public. C, Council endorse option one. Should a multiple entry name be the winner, as outlined in the body of the report? Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? Carried unanimously. The next item is on page 85, Blackmans Bay Skate Park, with a recommendation on page 87.
Your Honour, may the matter be discussed.
Discussed? Do I have a seconder to discuss? Thank you, Councillor Reid. I'll put that the matter be discussed. Those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? That is carried unanimously. Councillor Chadden.
Mayor, the reason I've asked for it to be discussed, I know we've done a survey of the people, the users of the park, and that's very commendable and what they think can happen, but have we surveyed the residents of the area? Because I've had numerous complaints from years and years and years about the skate park. One of the things that disappoints me is that, and coming back from the residents that speak to me, is that the park has been taken over a period of time by more mature people, old students, and the young ones can't go in there and have a go because the big kids push them out. And the parents are saying that they have to really go and supervise and take the kids over there at half past 7 o'clock in the morning to get a go in the park before the real kids come. Now, that's one issue, and I know we've put in lights, we've put in one stage, we've put in big overhead sprinkler things to try and stop the people there at night because it was annoying the residents. Once again, have we done residential consultation? I know it's a large area, and I know there's a lot of people in Blackmans Bay that would like to skate, but this park, I believe, brings people from outside Blackmans Bay. Therefore, what I'm saying, is it the best place for the park? Now, some municipalities have two or three skate parks, and are we better to have that skate park to the level that it is there in Blackmans Bay, leave that, and build something else, e.g. up near the sports centre? Because there are more, in my opinion, I may be wrong, but there are more children going to the sports centre to use facilities there, and how tremendous it would be to have a skate park attached to the sporting precinct that we have up in Summerlees. And I'm just wondering whether we're making the right decision to increase the size of this park and put all this money into that, rather than have another park of a great standard, and we've seen it done in other municipalities where they've opened, I think Clarence just opened a beautiful skate park over there, and build it somewhere like the sports centre. Still have this one in Blackmans Bay by all means, because it's catering for, but people are saying they can't get to it unless mum or dad drive them there. It's out of the way. So I'm just throwing it open for a discussion point at this time, Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. And before I move on to Councillor Reid, you did ask at the very beginning some specific questions. Did you want Mr Smee to answer any of those?
I'm more than happy to Mr Smee to answer my questions. Thank you.
Mr Smee, do you want to hear those questions again?
No, I think I've gotten. Thanks, Mr Mayor. So through you, the first question related to who has been surveyed, and you'll note in 6.2 of the report that hard copies of the survey were posted to all neighbours in the adjoining area, and we did get feedback from a number of the neighbours. Some of it was opposing any further development in the park because of the history of antisocial behaviour, but a lot of the feedback we got from neighbours was positive in relation to supporting the additional infrastructure within the park that will make it a more family-friendly place to go, that will hopefully then reduce that level of antisocial behaviour that can occur there. The second question related to young children getting pushed out by older children, and I guess that's one of the factors why we are proposing an addition to the skate park, and that is that the addition will cater for the older children. It will provide something that's a little bit more challenging, which will then free up the existing facility to be used by the younger children. So I think that answers both of those questions.
Thank you, Mr. Smee.
May I say, I looked. My other question was, have we looked at other sites and venues?
Mr. Smee?
Yeah, through you, Mr. Mayor. We haven't done a detailed analysis of what other sites may be available. Certainly the Kingborough Sports Centre Precinct Master Plan doesn't identify a skate park in that area, and it's difficult to, off the top of my head, come up with an alternate location that could accommodate, say, a major regional skate park facility such as what's recently been developed at Rosny. In addition, I'm mindful of the cost of such a development, and what we've all, or certainly what our youth officer is endeavouring to do is respond to the many requests that she receives from young people in relation to the Blackmans Bay Park, and in addition respond to the requests from residents in Blackmans Bay that would like to see a little bit more in that area than just the fairly barren park that we've got at the moment.
Thank you, Mr. Smee. Councillor Reid?
I'm of a mind like Councillor Chatterton, in that I read this and thought back to my time on the Kingborough Council's Police Community Liaison Committee, where probably every second meeting there was a discussion about antisocial behaviour associated with the skate park and the difficulties that local residents were having with late night noises, problems with vandalism and so on. And so I do question whether we're right to develop this further or try and develop a longer-term plan. I really like the idea of it going up to the sports centre, because if you look at the survey and what the people are actually using it for in Section 4, they talk about 32 of them are using it for BMX, so then you'd have it located near the mountain bike park. You know, some are using scooters, some are doing multiple sports, so it would be a beautiful tie-in to have it in our sports precinct. But if we don't have the space there, then my preferred location would be the old Kingston High School site, where we've got going to have an awful lot of land and could develop a great facility comparable to that at Clarence that recently opened, because it does bring people to the area, and that would be also central to get buses to and so on. So I wonder if we're not just doing this a little bit too early, given where we're at with Kingston High School. I do note also from the I found interesting the breakdown of the ages of the people who responded to the survey, because there were not very many who were over 55. There are only about six. And there is an aged care group of units directly opposite the skate park in Wells Parade. And I know one of the residents there, and they do get quite a bit of noise from there. And they probably, well, from the looks of it, I mean, they're all in their 70s and 80s and some older, and I imagine that they would be pretty mortified at an expansion in their area, because sometimes that antisocial behaviour, unfortunately, does flow over away from the area. And I know there's been damage to cars that are parked in front of those units in Wells Parade that the elderly people have, and it does seem to be linked to the users of the park. So that's why I think a skate park in the middle of a residential area isn't necessarily a good fit. It might be convenient for some people to get there, but we should be thinking a little bit more creatively. So I don't want to see us rush into this at this stage. As nice as it would be to put in something to the community fund, I'd like us to just wait and see what happens the next couple of years, and look at what our options are with other locations.
Thank you, Councillor Reid. Councillor Grace.
Yeah, that's a good point, Councillor Reid. That's my sensitive too, because I've had numerous phone calls from Latmans Bay, people crying on the phone at 10 o'clock at night. The police go around there, skid them off, 10 minutes later they're back there. I don't think it's as bad. I haven't heard so many complaints in the last 6 or 7 months. I haven't heard too much, and the same with Taroon, I haven't heard much up there. But I would put a motion, if I can, if the motion fails that's in front of us, that we defer it, because I'd like to see more investigations take place, because we're talking about also Kingborough. You've got a skate park at Taroon, at Blackmans Bay, Kettering and Bruny Island, which the community built. But what about the people down south at Margate? Snug, Electrona. We have nothing down there for those kids. I think Blackmans Bay, my personal opinion, should stay as it is, and if we want to build something, let's build a new one. We've got Drew Point as a place that could be built on Drew Point, a skate park, and therefore give more time for staff to investigate the situation. And I would strongly support that we select grants for another skate park, like Clarence did. We don't need to overkill Blackmans Bay, because we're going to go through the same drama again as soon as we put it in for the teenagers in the 30s and the 40s on their nights out. We're going to go back to what we were at. We're still going to have problems when we build a new one somewhere else, because it does take time to settle down. But Drew Point would be ideal, because it's locked up at 7 o'clock at night and it's supervised.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Councillor Berry?
Thank you, Mayor. I think we're probably forgetting what it is to what it's like to be a kid, and I completely disagree with any suggestion that we build at vast expense a new skate park up at the sports centre. Every single child who uses the skate park, if it were to be built up at the sports centre, would have to be taken up there by their parents. Mm-hmm. That's why skate parks are usually in residential areas, because in residential areas actually is where children live. I don't want to be sarcastic about it, but that's the reason that skate parks are in residential areas. That's why Hobart City Council has built this gee whiz skate park in the middle of a residential area in North Hobart. I mean, I just can't understand that the notion that we would be thinking of spending X $100,000 on a new skate park in a place that's inaccessible for kids whose parents don't have cars. It's just, it just beggars belief. I can't understand it. I don't think I better say any more about this. Certainly if there has been some antisocial behaviour down there, on and off, it fluctuates. I think on the whole it's been dealt with very appropriately. One way of making sure that a facility, because I think actually that skate park down there is looking a little bit tired, and I think it'd just be an excellent idea to expand the area, to have more facilities there. The better the facility is, the more likely it is to get looked after properly. So I completely support the recommendation we have in front of us, and would not contemplate the idea of us building a new skate park in a place where every kid who uses it has to be taken there by car.
Thank you, Councillor Berry. Councillor Winner.
I know there's no police officers in the room, but I'll ask a general question and someone might be able to answer as best they can. What sort of understanding do we have about the level of antisocial behaviour that's going on at the skate park at the moment?
Mr Smee, are you able to answer that?
Yes, through you, Mr Mayor. As Councillor Berry said, it does fluctuate. And I have to say, a lot of the antisocial behaviour doesn't come from users of the skate park. It's a destination where people turn up and they're not necessarily skaters or users of the park. It's simply a destination to go and have a drink and make noise. So that will occur regardless of whether there's a skate park there or not. The measures we've put in place, including the lighting and the sprinkler system, have made a significant impact upon the after-hours use by skaters, which then causes the noise which disturbs residents. So I would suggest that the amount of antisocial behaviour that occurs as a result of its use as a skate park is actually quite minimal, but as a public open space area, it does attract undesirable use at times.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Yep. And oh, partly because it's at a beach, it's at Blackmans Bay Beach in a residential area. So the fact there's a skate park there, to me, yes, it may increase slightly, but there is going to be antisocial behaviour, unfortunately, at Blackmans Bay Beach after hours, the same as there is at the moment at Kingston Beach, where there is no skate park, because young people congregate together in areas, sometimes after dark, in every community in Tasmania and Australia, and this is what happens. And they also do it at skate parks. I'm really disappointed. I'm glad that Councillor Berry spoke before me, because I was sitting here thinking I was in some kind of alternate universe where we didn't support investing in infrastructure for young people. The idea of taking it to the Kingborough Sports Centre is ridiculous. This is an entirely different demographic of young people that go up and train and do and play sport, I think, anyway. In my experience, I'm a little bit past being a teenager, but not that long ago. It's a different different demographic of young people that skate to use the sports centre for a start. And the reason why a lot of these kids at Blackmans Bay are using the skate park is because they live locally. My friends who lived at Blackmans Bay when I was growing up in Kingborough all utilised the skate park at Kingston Beach. My friends who lived at Kingston Beach, I didn't skate because there wasn't a skate park in the area. This is a really good proposal, but it's not a proposal for the Rosny skate park either. If you look at the consultation, and I did a little bit on my Facebook page, the criticism from young people was that the skate park we're proposing here wasn't going to be good enough. This isn't of the scale or the scope of the Rosny skate park. It's not going to be of, you know, competition standard, as far as I can tell anyway, as Rosny is. So if you're talking about something that is for your semi-professional or your someone who really wants to make their mark on the skating, because you can do that worldwide, then that's something entirely different. And I think the idea I did like was much better was at the old Kingston High School site. I think that's more central for young people living in Kingston. But the problem with this, with the sports centre, is that, as Councillor Berry said, there's actually no way to get there. I unfortunately got left without a lift recently, and walked up from Kingston Beach to the Twin Ovals, and it took me something like 45 minutes and quite a strenuous walk to get there, and then walk home. And that's what young people are going to end up doing, either skating or walking up there. I totally support this, and I support utilising the public open space account in, I think, the way that it's intended, and I support council taking a really proactive approach to building infrastructure that young people want and desire. And I'd be really disappointed if, I know we're still discussing, but I would be disappointed if we didn't commit to this project that's proposed in the paper, because I think it's really important that we do this, and I think skate parks belong in suburban areas, and the skate park, and a skate park now belongs in Blackmans Bay, at that area, yeah, I hope it's supported.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson.
Don't talk to me about the young people, as Paul Kelly said. The Councillor Winter and Councillor Berry have said pretty much most of what I wanted to say. I think that it's important that it's in Blackmans Bay. I live very close to the sports centre, but I don't want to see every recreational facility for young people concentrated on the sports centre. To me, one of the most important points in this report is 4.3. This is consistent with the finding of a report prepared by the Council's Urban Design Officer in 2013 that concluded that antisocial behaviour in the park could be reduced if it was enhanced as an area that could be enjoyed by the whole community. The problem with going, well, leave Blackmans Bay Skate Park as it is and build something somewhere else, you're not going to improve the antisocial behaviour at Blackmans Bay by doing that. What you do, you know, as our staff are advising us, the way to make it more used and reduce antisocial behaviour is to make it a better facility. This is the experience, you know, I only know from the Mayor of Fremantle was over a year or so ago, and he talked about the set up of a skate park in the middle of one of the, you know, main parks in Fremantle, and everyone said, what a catastrophe, the young people are going to come and do whatever young people do in it. And in fact it was wonderful, and the community adopted it, and families had picnics around it because they made it a fabulous skate park. And I think, you know, the advice we're being given is this is how to make this a better facility for the community. You know, I wouldn't like to see us trying to move it or leaving it as it is. When the Kingston High School site, former Kingston High School site, whatever it's going to be called, develops further, let's build a skate park there too, if that's what we decide to do. But I think that the solution for any problems with the Blackmans Bay Skate Park is to improve it. That's what we're being advised by the staff who know about this stuff. I think this is a good recommendation, and I think, you know, I would like to see the motion put as it is. In fact, I'm happy to put it if that's...
You've moved the motion?
Yeah, I'll move the motion as it stands.
Second, Councillor Berry. By a nose.
He's moved it, but I'll talk. Can I talk on the motion now?
No lights on, so yeah. Floor's yours, Councillor Berry.
I won't support this because, again, as I pointed out, Mayor, we're disregarding our community south. Everything's at Blackmans Bay and Kingston. Nothing for the people down south. We've allowed the big development down in Margate and Snug, the big population down there now of young people. And I think it's time we turned an eye and looked down that end of town. Just one thing I'd like to point out too is, Mayor, Councillor Winter, you may not recall, but this council spent $30,000, $50,000 to put a BMX track down on Kingston Beach. And what happened? There was that much trouble there. We had to dig the thing back up and spend another $100,000 to shift it because of the vandalism down there. So we did try Kingston Beach at one time. But back to the question of the skate park, if this motion, and I know it'll get passed possibly, I won't support this motion, but I would move an amended motion if I can to defer this for further investigation, because we must look at these kids down south.
Thank you, Councillor Gross. There's nothing stopping you looking at A, deferment, or B, to look at a further in-study for Margate.
Well, I move that I'd like to see a study done of it, Mayor, a further study, and incorporate, if you want the wording, incorporate Margate, Snug, Electoral.
The motion's either deferred or it isn't one or the other.
As I said, he can also amend it, or he can also flag that we would look at a future park at Margate or beyond later. So I'm in your hands, Councillor.
Sorry,
I'm in your hands.
Well, look, I don't want this to go ahead because I think it's cynical to the community over there. Sorry? Well, again, Mayor, I'd like to move that it be deferred.
That the matter be deferred?
Yes. That's it.
Do I have a seconder? I don't have a seconder, Councillor Gross. Sorry, Councillor Reid out of the corner. Okay. I do have a seconder. So I'll put that the matter be deferred. Councillors in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
Aye.
I'll have a division or a show of hands. Those in favour that the matter be deferred, please, are Councillor Reid and Councillor Grace. Those against are Councillors Winter, Percy, Chatterton, Berry, Atkinson and Wass. Motion is lost. Where was I up to? A speaker to the motion. Are there any, or has there been sufficient? Councillor Chatterton.
As I said before, I didn't say it should be moved to the sports centre, and I think a couple of councillors misunderstood. I said it should. That was a site that could be considered, and I didn't say that's where it should be moved to. I take offence to those comments that were made by a couple of councillors. And look, the suggestion that we could build one at Kingston Common, Kingston Green, or Elephant Park, or whatever Councillor Grace wants to call it, is another issue. But what's happened is, yes, the antisocial behaviour, to my knowledge, has decreased at Blackmans Bay. And I think part of the reason, I don't know, but I think part of the reason it may have decreased is because there's a better skate park now at Rosny, as Mr. Smee alluded to. And a lot of the antisocial behaviour comes from not the local people. It's the people coming in cars to talk and do things with other children, shall I put it politely. And there has been, I'm not talking about envelopes and things that get delivered at times. Those sort of that was the antisocial behaviour that was taking place at the park, and that type of thing. And there was palings pulled off fences. There was rubbish bins set on fire. There were all sorts of antisocial behaviour, and it was coming from not the local kids. It's coming from the older kids or the older people coming into the area. And I think if you've got an attractive, something new and attractive, it brings that element into the area. That's where I'm coming from. The local people and the local kids were probably quite good. But once again, to get to that skate park in Blackmans Bay, a lot of kids had to be taken by car because they were living too far away. And as Councillor Winter said, a lot of people won't walk a reasonable distance. And people that lived at one end of Blackmans Bay, they wouldn't walk down there. They'd have to get mum and dad to take them down in a car. You know, and Blackmans Bay is a very, very hilly area. People in Kingston wanted to skate. Some of them, believe it or not, wanted to skate. And they used to try and get lifts over. But the antisocial behaviour there has decreased. And I'm not getting the complaints about it as I was earlier on. But I'm just concerned that if we do increase it and do modify it, will that antisocial behaviour come back again? I'm not against having a skate park there by any means. I believe we should have more of these skate parks or more facilities local to where the people live that they can get to, and I totally support that. You know, unfortunately, a lot of the areas, as Councillor Grace alluded to, a lot of areas haven't got any facilities at all. But I suppose the children at Snug have got a beach they can go and some play equipment down there, and they've got an oval. The kids at Margate have got Drew Point available to them. So there are things around, but it is limited. And the main sporting facilities are up at the sports centre. And all I'm saying is we need to spread things around. And look, we tried to get things going at all sorts of areas. We've had vandalisation in the past, and look what happened out at the end of Tinderbox Road, out at Pearson's Point. The problems we've had over the years out at Pearson's Point when we tried to get the area tidied up out there for picnickers and so on. So there's always going to be antisocial behaviour no matter where you go. But I just, all I was flagging is that it does, when you upgrade something, you can get more antisocial behaviour. And that's why I was asking whether or not we'd got the residents on side and coming with us for the journey. I'm not opposed to the upgrade, and I'm not opposed to the skate park being there. But all I'm saying is I just want to make sure that the community is living happily together.
Thank you, Councillor Chandon. Councillor Winter.
Yeah, I'm glad that Councillor Chatterton's not opposed to the skate park or upgrading it. Acknowledge you said that. I'm also not opposed to the skate park, and I'm not opposed to upgrading or expanding it. And I hope that tonight we can agree to do that, or at least agree to the direction recommended in the motion. Just to add a couple of comments by Councillor Grace, we're not trading off between facilities for young people in Margate versus facilities for young people in Blacklands Bay. The point that I made earlier was about these facilities need to be made for local people, and I've had contact, and I think I've spoken to you about this privately, I've had contact from people in Margate and Electrona saying that they want more facilities for young people in that area, and if something comes to council about that, I'll be absolutely supporting doing that. My point is that these things are local, and young people don't have cars and they can't travel vast distances without their parents, and a lot of this, the age that you're using, that young people are using this is an age where they want to be independent. They don't want to have to rely on mum and dad to take them somewhere. They want to be able to walk along the road and engage with their friends. So it's unfortunate that the way representation works is that we don't have 15-year-old councillors sitting around here to give us some advice. We I think typically local government and all levels of government engage with young people pretty poorly, and that's something for us all to work on, I guess, including myself. But having done a little bit of consultation myself, I think that there's a real, from young people at least, there is a desire for an upgraded skate park in the area, and that's why I support this motion.
Thank you, Councillor Winter. Being no further speakers, I'll put the recommendation. We haven't opened it, but if you want to close it, you may close it. Yeah, go on.
Thank you. I just also want to respond to what Councillor Grace said, which is I also agree that Margate and Snug and Peggy's Beach are growth areas and we need facilities for young people down there. I don't see this as trading that off, and I would also support proposals in that way. So I'm on side with that. But I think that the issue about antisocial behaviour at this skate park exists. The professional advice we've been provided is that by improving it, it'll reduce any incidence of antisocial behaviour. That's the experience in other places. We're being told by the staff that it's not the skaters that are the problem, that it's people coming into, if it's... So I don't think it's to do with the quality of the skating facility that it'll encourage antisocial behaviour by improving it. I just think this is a good proposal. I'm happy to follow the advice of the staff, which is that this will improve the facility, improve the behaviour at the site, and so I encourage councillors to support the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Atkinson, seconded by Councillor Berry, that A, an allocation of $60,000 be provided from the Kingston Blackmans Bay Public Open Space account to support an application to the Tasmanian Community Fund for an addition to the Blackmans Bay Skate Park. B, a further report be provided to Council providing options and details in relation to the inclusion of additional elements to the park to make it more attractive and family-friendly space. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? We'll have a division or a show of hands, please. Councillors in favour are Councillors Winter, Percy, Chatterton, Berry, Atkinson and Wass. And opposing the motion, we have Councillor Grace, Councillor Reid. Motion is carried. The next item is on page 94, information reports. There are three reports, and of course there is a page that Amanda sent out to you updating, I think, page 108. So that is changed. So can I have a mover and a seconder that these information reports be noted? Thank you, Councillor Percy, and thank you, Councillor Reid. The first one is the summarised financial report for the period the 1st of July 15 to the 30th of April 16. Any questions, comments? Councillor Percy.
Yes, it's on the capital work summary. Obviously, we're getting to the pointy end of the year. and it is on page 102. Just an update on where we're likely to be at the end of the year with capital expenditure. I think we've got 10 months into the report, and we've got 56% expenditure. I'm just wondering if we could have a bit of an update on likely expenditure.
Mr. Reeve? Through you, Mayor. Yes, that's correct. We are getting to the stage of the year there where less work gets done, particularly with the weather conditions we're actually having at the moment there. Most of the major projects have been completed. Largest one that's still outstanding is Drew Point, which was always intended to go over two financial years. That's currently out for comments from a development application perspective. So the intention was that that would be tendered towards the end of this financial year. In terms of where we're actually travelling, there's still a number of projects there that will be still underway by the end of the financial year, so they won't be fully completed in terms of construction-wise. So we're just collating that information at the moment. But in terms of the overall program, most of the major projects will be done. It'll be some of the smaller ones there which will carry over into next financial year. So the dollars might be fairly large because of Drew Point and actually, I guess, making sure the actual money is actually paid, but the fiscal work, the majority of that will be completed towards the end of the financial year.
Thank you, Mr. Rowe.
May I ask a follow-up on that?
Certainly.
Before Councillor Percy goes on. If we look at that diagram then, Mr. Rick, does that mean that 16% committed, does that include that money you referred to as far as Drew Point, or is that money that you referred to with Drew Point, is that in the unexpended section?
Mr. Reed?
Through you, Mayor. Yes, that's the latter one. Bearing in mind, as I said, it's the Drew Point one's going through a development application process at the moment there. So until it's actually tendered and the tenders come in, then it's a non-committed project at this stage.
So just to follow up on that again, just to get clarification for the rest of the councillors. So what we're saying is the expended is expended, committed is what's underway, the unexpended is what could go out to tender prior to the 30th of June. So therefore, that 28% we've got unexpended, and if we do go out to tender on a couple of jobs and that money comes in, how much of that 28% is it likely to eat away? Are we looking at 50% of that disappearing? Do we have some sort of ballpark figure there, please?
Mr. Rowe?
Through you, Mayor. I don't have those figures at my fingertips at the moment there, but do bear in mind that there was a recent council report that was put up, particularly for Drew Point there, in terms of actually moving some funding from the deferred project for Beach Road into Drew Point there. So it's well over $1 million that just sits in Drew Point one by itself. So that would account for the majority of that expenditure that you're talking about there.
Councillor Percy? Yeah, I think just in noting on page 98, operating expenses under materials and contracts, you may recall last year when we were setting the budget, I was trying to get resealing costs transferred to capital expenditure because that's how I believe they should be handled, and also resheeting. We changed resheeting into capital expenditure. It's good to see now that we have a policy where we have now transferred $300,000 of resale costs in the capital expenditure because that's where I believe they belong. That was confirmed, I think, by the TAS Audit Office at one of the audit meetings late last year. So I think originally I was told it was mainly for maintenance of bitumen roads, but it's to me it's a capital item and it's now been recognised as that, and it's probably a change in policy, I suppose, by this council to now reclassify it into capital expenditure. Thank you. Thank you. Councillor Grace?
Mayor, on this report from Kingborough Waste Services.
We'll move on to Kingborough Waste Services because there's no one else wish to speak. Kingborough Waste Services. And just before you start, for the record, Councillor Atkinson left the room at 7:22 and returned at 7:24. So, Councillor Grace, we're now on KWS.
Yeah, you're right.
Yep. Just on some of the stuff that comes through from KWS board, for an example, if you go to page 114, just use that as an example, or 160, how are you supposed to read it? Because I've got glasses and I can't pick up the items down through there. I've got no hope picking them up with the glasses I've got. Well, I've got them too, but I just can't pick them up. So can we have that improved? So well, you tell me if anyone else can read.
We'd like the print a little bit larger.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good if we could.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, we can do that. So, yep. No, that's fine. Point taken, and thank you for that. If you don't let us know, we don't know. Councillor Winter?
Yeah. So we had a report a couple of months ago. And we didn't pass the proposed resolution. We passed an amended resolution which increased the general waste from $8 to $10. But there are a couple of other parts to that recommendation. I'm just trying to... It's only just come to mind now. That included... That were recommended or requested by the board about... I think one of them was transferring what is currently a loan... and making and turning that into actually KWS asset on the books. Councillor Percy's not looking at it.
Sorry.
But there was a couple of other aspects to that motion that were recommended or requested by the board of KWS. What's my general question is, what are we actually doing with this? Because they've still got a negative assets on the balance sheet, and it doesn't look particularly flash financially, so...
And on page 113, it does say Kingborough Council loan, 355.
Yep. Oh, it's in their actual minutes, is it?
Yep. Yes. So what you're suggesting is that maybe that should go to KWS's working capital.
I'm just asking what, I suppose from the general manager's perspective, what's the next step for us in terms of trying to resolve the financial issues that are impacting KWS?
Well, perhaps I'll ask one of the directors, either Mr. Reeve or Mr. Ferrier. Mr. Ferrier?
Through the chair, the report that went to council previously recommended that the loan be transferred to KWS in order to ensure that their balance sheet was in the black. Council decided not to do that, but did agree to review the situation once a waste management strategy had been prepared, and that is to be done in the second half of this calendar year.
Yep. That's
great. Okay.
So on that basis, we'll end this financial year as this way, and we can go the other way.
Yeah, look, it's still... The balance sheet is pretty ugly. I was also expecting a bit more of an uptick in terms of the revenue... numbers from February and March than we actually got, given the increase from $8 to $10. And I've said it a few times, I'm really concerned about the situation we're in with KWS. I'm not sure how to approach it. I would like to go out to tender again at some point in time, but I'm not sure I've got that much support for that, but I appreciate the report.
Thank you, Councillor Winter. Councillor Percy?
Just for the record, on page 104, finance, I think there's been a mix-up there between the February and March figures. They're quoting some February and some March figures. So page 104, under finance, number 5, it says the 2016 March results is an overall deficit of operation of 36,850 for the year to date, which is correct. The result is 44,410, which is actually a February figure year to date. So that's just a minor variation there. Also, in a couple of weeks, we've got a free green waste weekend scheduled down there on the 28th of May and 29th of May, which is probably good. However, I'm just wondering whether this is a particular marketing strategy or whether it's something that's historic. I'm just wondering why we do that every year and what's the benefits of doing it.
the benefit from KWS's perspective or the benefit of the community's perspective?
I can see the benefits to the community. I'm just wondering if it's an overall marketing strategy to get people to start using green waste and taking it down on a regular basis, or, I mean, we must do it for a reason.
Mr. Reeve?
Through you, Mayor. Look, in answer to the first part of the question, my understanding it's a historic setup there in terms of encouraging free green waste weekends. So they seem to have varied from two per year, but for this year there, because the uptake wasn't as much, then we've been able to actually run another free green waste weekend as well. I guess it's a fairly topical thing in terms of green waste in general. So I know that I've been receiving quite a few queries from various people out there driven by what's actually happening in other neighbouring councils with green waste. And obviously we've had the presentation as regards, you know, the potential waste management strategy there and the direction that we're likely to go in terms of green waste or as an option for council to consider. So it may well be that, you know, that might be something that is a thing of the past and we move to a more encompassing type setup for green waste as we go forward. But certainly it has been more of a historical setup in terms of providing that service to the community.
Thank you. Mr. Ferrier?
Through you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Mayor, just in response to Councillor Percy's first note about the error in the mathematics, I'll just point out to the councillors that I made a mistake in not putting in the March figures in the second table on that page, so that's why that figure is incorrect. So I've included the March figures in the top table, but in the bottom table I've not done the same. And I'd just like to point out that if you do put the figures in on the bottom table from the final cash table on the in the report, it does indicate that we have a variance of about $65,000, which is better than the actual figure is better than the budgeted figure by that amount. So I can attribute that to really probably to the fee increase, a large part of that at least to the fee increase that we've so the finances are getting better because we are taking more fees at the site.
Thank you, Mr. Ferrier. Councillors, we'll move on to item 3, the General Manager's Diary for 18th of April to the 16th of May. Are there any questions or comments to the General Manager? Councillor Reid?
5th of May, the General Manager met with Mr. Hinckley from Service TAS. I'm just wondering if you could give us an update on what the progress is in relation to the Medicare Centrelink office.
Mr. Arnold?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I wish I could, Councillor Reid, except to say that in the meeting with Mr. Hinckley, he wanted to assure the council that he would, on behalf of his department, be doing everything he could to make sure that there was a smooth transition into Service TAS, and that you know, he hoped that would be a permanent arrangement moving forward. That was the basis of the discussion.
So we're not aware of any further details because of what that service provision would look like, because one of the concerns expressed by many residents was that where this sort of co-location had happened elsewhere, that it was just a terminal or two that were computer terminal or two that were in Service TAS, and the answer was no, go over there and look it up online, which is not going to be suitable for you know, some members of our population.
Mr. Arnold?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, fully agree, Councillor Reid. I was at pains during that meeting to try and make sure that he was in no doubt about the sentiments of the council that I've heard expressed both in here and individually and collectively in other forums. He indicated that there is a similar arrangement through Service TAS in place in Devonport. I made a mental note to make sure I had a look at that, which I haven't done yet, but you've just reminded me and I will do that. I suppose from my point of view, the meeting I saw as an opportunity to put the point that we wanted to continue the communication channels. He's agreed to meet with me regularly on that basis so that as soon as the transition occurs, if there are any issues, I'll be happy to take them on board and take them up.
Yep. Just my final question then on that is, I guess, I mean, to a large degree, it's out of his domain and more with the federal department. So have we had any more communication with them to emphasise what we believe the needs of the Kimberley community are over and above just a computer terminal there?
Mr. Rowe?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, no, but I will rectify that now that you've raised it.
Councillor Grace?
Look, I just had a question raised to me on Sunday at Bruny Island. Not through the meeting, it was outside the meeting. Mr General Manager, on the 11th of May, as you're aware, we had a reception to thank our volunteers as part of the National Volunteer Week. The question was asked, is there any reason why Bruny Island's left out of this Volunteer Week?
Mr. Arnold.
Three, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Grace, no. That particular reception, and my colleague Daniel Smee may wish to add to my response, but that particular reception was primarily aimed at those existing committees of council. And my understanding, Daniel Smee is nodding, that the invitations went out on that basis on this occasion.
That was volunteer committees. Do you want to add anything, Mr. Smee? No?
So the,
no, thank you.
The Bruny Island Bike Committee, did they get a, as part of Kingborough, did they get an invitation?
On the committee of council?
No.
No? All right, thank you. Councillor Chatterton?
Look, I was just going back to where Councillor Reek was talking about Mr Hinckley. Next time you're talking to Mr Hinckley, Mr General Manager, could you see if you could find out why we have a different standard of Service Tasmania officers at Huonville, Kingston and Hobart, because Kingston is of a lower standard. And I say a lower standard because if one is going to apply for a, let's give an example, a pension, one has to provide a birth certificate. And to get a birth certificate at Kingston, you can only apply and wait 14 days. If you apply at Huonville or Hobart, you can apply, pay an additional fee and have it within 24 hours or a few hours and collect it at Service Tasmania. But that facility is not available at Kingston. Seeing that Centrelink will move into the same office, it would seem likely that those two services should be able to marry up a bit better.
Yeah, thank you, Councillor Chatham. We have been aware that they don't do the full service here, and they never have. Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you. I've said two queries about previous motions on page 118, I think it is. The first one was the Climate Change Research Centre lobbying. Is there any more information on that? It says lobbying federal politicians to be undertaken.
Mr. Arnold.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Thanks, Councillor Atkinson. The first step to address Council's resolution is to hold a meeting with CSIRO at the officer level so that we can get a better handle on what is actually being proposed. To that end, my colleague John Doole and I have arranged a meeting for Friday of next week with Dr. Andreas Schiller, who is the Deputy Director of CSIRO, particularly in the Marine Division. So that will commence that process. I'm mindful, and councillors may be aware, that next month the Mayor and I are attending the ELGA conference in Canberra, and we're endeavouring to set up through that opportunity a range of meetings with federal politicians, and we will be armed with the information that comes from the meeting that John and I are attending next week.
Right, thank you. And just for my clarification, the Marine Division is responsible for that area of the fire.
Through Mr. Mayor, that's my understanding.
Great. Yes. Thank you. And look, the other one, and you've advised me verbally on this, but the Tasmanian Community Coalition, there's no notes against that item. Could you give us an update on the progress there, please?
Mr. Allen. Through you, Mr. Mayor, following a recent notice of motion from yourself, Councillor Atkinson, the Council resolved that we would join the coalition, and within 7 days we were a member of that coalition.
So that item's now closed, yep.
That's closed, yes. Yeah,
thank you.
Councillors, I'll go to the recommendation, being no further questions or comments, that the following information reports be noted. So they're there, 1, 2, 3, moved by Councillor Percy and seconded by Councillor Reid. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? That is carried unanimously. Would you like a break, Councillors, or would you like to keep going? Keep going? I got a very strong vibe to know. We'll move on to page 122, confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. Thank you. Councillor Grace?
Wanted a matter of interest that I wanted to raise. A matter of interest. You told us if we had a matter, we could put our hand up.
If
it doesn't need to go into closed session.
Okay, if you'd like to tell me now.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to ask my colleagues to support you write a letter to the Chicken Ayres' family. As you're aware, the loss of Norman Ayres. As we know, most of us, I think, knows that his wife used to work here for many years and one of his daughters, but Norman did so much work in this municipality, he'll certainly be sadly missed.
More than happy to do that, Councillor.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Mayor.
And certainly a well-known and respected line member. Confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. Thank you, Councillor Eaton. Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. That in accordance with the Regulation 15, the Local Government Meeting Procedure Regulation 2015, the following items to be dealt with in closed session. Applications for leave of absence, tender for financial management information system for Kingborough and Huon Valley Councils, Kingborough Indoor Cricket Centre. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? That is carried unanimously. The next item is closed session.